Hi, folks. Welcome to the Smart Ass Historian. I am, as always, the Great White Snark, Scotty J. And seated next to me is the Reverend Jeff.
How's it going?
Dude, I forgot to tell you last time we met, but I went to a concert at a bar a few weeks ago.
A concert at a bar?
Yeah, there was a band playing. And this band is called Hairbangers Ball.
Hairbangers Ball?
Yeah, and they play all 80s music.
Not Headbangers Ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, their logo is done up like Headbangers Ball, but they're Hairbangers. Mm-hmm. And their band of the month was Motley Crue, so they played a lot of Motley Crue. Huh. But I went out to this, you know, I went out to see him with a friend. And the show wasn't bad. But they should have done a sound check before the show began because, like, for the first half an hour, all I could hear was the lead singer and the drummer.
Uh-huh.
The guitars were muffled.
Oh, shit.
So, like, halfway through the show, they had to stop and turn the volume up.
They didn't do the check?
No. No, they didn't do a sound check. And then the people in this bar, I damn near watched a porno happen in front of me.
Oh, shit.
There was a guy, he had a woman. And he was, like, all fucking grinding up on her and shit. And I'm with my friend, I'm like, I'm not ready to watch a porno happen over here.
They're going to fuck on the dance floor.
Yeah. I mean, he was up all grinding on her and had his hand down the back of her pants and was like,
shit.
And then, like, before I left, because I left at midnight. The show started at 10. I left at midnight, and when I left at midnight, the volume was dropping again.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Somebody hit the knob.
Someone knocked into it too good, and he had two women with him. And he was fucking grinding up on the both of them.
Fucking word of mouth is getting out.
And then, what else happened? Then there were women there that were like, that were definitely way too young to have been alive when this music was popular to begin with.
Isn't that fucked up?
And then there was women who had not left the 80s.
Yeah.
In hairstyle and fashion. Of course, they probably put on a couple extra pounds since the 80s, because that spandex was a screaming.
Their spandex and crop top don't quite fit the way.
No, one had a crop top and a beer belly sticking out. And, you know, the spandex, you could see the stitchings were starting to pop a little bit. And then I got to watch some new drunk white girl dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've seen like two maneuvers. I've seen a new one. This girl started with her hands, both hands up here, and she just kind of like wave them down and get about head length, and then they'd go back up. And I was like, dude. And then there was a guy with a bitch biscuit there.
She's doing the seaweed.
Yeah.
A bitch biscuit?
Yeah.
This guy, man bun?
Yeah, this guy was walking around with a bitch biscuit on. And then there was a line going into the men's room. So either they were glory-holing or doing eight balls.
Yeah. A line going into the men's room?
Yeah, the guys were standing in a line to get in the men's room. And I'm standing with my friend, and I'm like, they're either doing cocaine in there, or they got a glory hole set up.
Someone's taking a shit.
And then what happened was Bitch Biscuit cut in front of everyone to go into the bathroom. I thought there was going to be a couple guys that was going to kick his ass. And then I saw a lot of...
They all have full beards?
No. Only a couple. But I did see a couple of those wide shoulder, short waist douchebags with the high and tight haircut walking around with their chest puffed up because they're with their women. I'm like, okay, dude, seriously, just stop.
He's peacocking.
Yeah, he was. I mean, the band was good. I mean, I knew the songs they were playing, so when the guitars weren't you know loud enough, I could fill it in my head. But then this guy, the lead singer, was like, all right, we're going to play some Ozzy. And I'm like, I know a song you're going to fucking play.
Yeah, Crazy Train.
Yeah.
Crazy Train or Iron Man?
No, it was Crazy Train. That was the only song I sang with them. I was doing a better job than the band. All right, we're going to talk about one of our space programs that we had. you know, before we went to the moon.
Is this the one where you accidentally got high?
You're right.
That space program.
Yeah, that was my first concert I went to. 1991, Operation Rock and Roll, Alice Cooper and Judas Priest.
Oh, jeez.
There was so much marijuana passed around that show, I came back and demolished 2 boxes of cereal. Contact High was... And I was watching my brother Jeremy at the time, and I told him, just leave me the box and the gallon of milk there at the table. And I was just like...
A friend of mine did that one time. I took him... Can't remember where we went. At another friend's house or something like that. And they totally smoked up the place. And we got back to his house and we're watching The Simpsons. And he like had a box of chocolate donuts. You know the ones that have their white, like cakey on the inside. Yeah. And chocolate, you know, on the outside.
Oh, yeah. Those are some good ones.
Yeah. Well, there's like a box of like 12 or something like that. And he's just munching the shit out of them. And I'm like looking over and I'm like, the box is getting pretty light. And I'm like, dude, you just ate all of those chocolate donuts with no milk. And he don't even have a cup of milk near him or anything.
Damn.
I'm like, and that's a no... I mean, there's no way.
Right.
Donuts and milk go hand in hand. And I'm like, you're high.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got a contact button.
Right.
And you're high as hell right now. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, dude, you just ate like 10 donuts.
With no
chocolate
milk.
Chocolate donuts with no fucking milk. And he's like, oh my God, I am high. And I'm like, I told you.
All right. We're going to cover the Gemini program. And I mean, we're kind of interested in the space program, but... Monica's son, James, he's really into the space program.
Oh, I bet.
When we went...
And probably dinosaurs, too?
Not so much dinosaurs. Not so much dinosaurs. He loves the space program.
You know, my kid's like dinosaurs.
He loves... I mean, when I went to D.C. with him on my first trip, he loves going to the Air and Space Museum.
I bet. I love that, too.
And...
my dad used to take me up to the...
the Adler?
No, the science and industry.
Okay.
And we go into the where the air, all the airplanes are and all that. I love that.
But I went through the space area with him and got to see like a thruster from one of the Titan rockets that took up the capsules and everything.
Cool.
You were talking about being small.
Oh yeah.
And, I mean, I tried explaining to him what I knew of the space program, but he loves the space program.
Huh.
At the Air and Space Museum, they got this one section up on the space side.
There's a whole lot worse things he could be into.
And they got, like, in one section of the space where you can, like, look at the planets, they got, like, a little diorama set up about the planets and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You go into this little room, and they got this big globe there. And you can punch up a planet on the computer. And the planet will fit the globe.
Wow.
So you can see what it looks like from orbit, and you can actually go in.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, James spun it twice real bad to where it kind of crashed the computer a little bit. So I had to reset the computer for him. He did. He'd, like, pull up Earth, and he would start spinning real fast, and I'd stand next to him going, oh no!
Now we have booster rockets that, like... will fly, you know, fly up and then come back and land.
Yeah.
Nose up and everything.
Well,
that's awesome.
When he was spinning the Earth, I was like...
Thanks to Elon Musk.
I was pretending that, you know, I was being affected by him spinning the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I was standing there going, oh no! It's dizzy! Stop! And he just crank it up faster. But, no, we're going to talk about the Gemini program. Now, we should cover LBJ because I was listening to Professor Buzzkill one day.
Mm-hmm.
And LBJ had a lot to do with the space program that we didn't even know about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, Kennedy gets his credit.
Yeah,
Nixon gets
the
credit.
Started.
LBJ was like right there at the beginning when he was in Congress kind of moving all this. So the Apollo program, we'll cover at a later date, was conceived in early 1960 as a three-man spacecraft to follow Project Mercury. Now, Jim Chamberlain, the head of engineering at the Space Task Group, was assigned in February of 61 to start working on a bridge program between Mercury and Apollo. Now, he presented two initial versions of a two-man spacecraft, then designated Mercury Mark II at a NASA retreat at Wallops Island in March of 61. Scale models were shown in July of 61 at the McDonnell Aircraft Corporation's offices in St. Louis. Ooh, St. Louis. Now, after Apollo was chartered to land men on the moon by President Kennedy on March 25th of 61, when he wasn't doing an intern or somebody, you know Kennedy was fucking nailing people left and right.
Marilyn Monroe.
You know one president who had more sex than Kennedy was Warren G. Harding?
Yeah.
Yeah, Harding got caught fucking in a closet at the White House.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It became evident to NASA officials that a follow-up on the Mercury program was required to develop certain spaceflight capabilities in support of Apollo. Now, NASA approved a two-man, two-vehicle program rechristened Project Gemini, which, you know, is for twins.
Yeah.
In reference to the third constellation of the Zodiac with its twin stars Castor and Pollux on December 7th, 1961. McDonnell Aircraft was contracted to build it on December 2nd, 1961. The program was publicly announced on January 3rd, 62, with these major objectives. Because, you know, we just can't send someone up to fucking space without an objective. To demonstrate endurance of humans and equipment in spaceflight for extended periods, at least 8 days required for a moon landing to a maximum of 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
All right. To effect rendezvous and docking with another vehicle, and to maneuver the combined spacecraft using the propulsion systems of the target vehicle. It made sense on how they got off the fucking moon.
Yeah.
The lunar module landed, they shot up, and, you know. To demonstrate extravehicular activity, or spacewalks, outside the protection of the spacecraft, and to evaluate the astronauts' ability to perform tasks there.
Hmm.
To perfect techniques of atmospheric re-entry and touchdown at a pre-selected location on land. Well, you know, they all hit ocean.
Yeah.
We actually have a Gemini, I think it's Gemini 12. We have a Gemini capsule up in Chicago at the Adler.
Yeah.
I looked at it with Alex and I'm like, there's no way you and me could have been Gemini astronauts. Nah, you gotta be a thin fucker for them capsules.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Well, it's like looking at a Skylab. Ain't no way we could have been astronauts in Skylab.
Hell no.
They're not big guy friendly. Jeff would have been up there and fucking destroyed the toilet. First time he had to use a Skylab toilet and destroyed the fucker.
Dropping bombs, you.
Great! We're stuck up here for 2 weeks with no shitter!
Talk about the Star Wars project.
Way to go, Jeff. Thanks for blowing up the toilet. Now we can have Wallowitz come up and fix the toilet.
Yeah.
Now, Chamberlain designed the Gemini capsule, which...
You're like, shut up and fix the shitter, there's space plumber.
Right. You know how long it's going to take a plumber to come up here from Earth?
Yeah.
I can't hold it, I'm going outside to pee! Chamberlain designed the Gemini capsule, which carried a crew of two. He was previously the chief aerodynamicist on Avro Canada's Avro Aerofighter... the Avro Aerofighter Interceptor Program. Now, Chamberlain joined NASA along with 25 senior Avro engineers after cancellation of the Aero program and became the head of the U.S. Space Task Group's engineering division in charge of Gemini. The prime contractor was the McDonnell Aircraft Corporation, which was also the prime contractor for the Project Mercury capsule.
Mercury.
Yeah.
Mercury capsule.
Whee, 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 whee. Astronaut Gus Grissom was heavily involved in the development and design of the Gemini spacecraft. With other Mercury astronauts dubbed Gusmobile, was so designed around Grissom's 5'6" body that NASA discovered in 63 that 14 of the 16 astronauts did not fit the capsule.
Oh, shit.
The interior had to be redesigned. And there's a... I mean, Gus Grissom has been up to the Adler a lot. There's a lot of his memorabilia up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, one of his spacesuits is up there.
Hmm.
And I mean, Gus donated a lot. I think he lives in Indiana.
Yeah.
So, he's donated stuff to, you know, his relics from the Gemini program to the Adler. And I mean, they even have, like, a computer bank of what, like, mission control looked like.
Yeah.
And there was a red phone there. So you could pick up the red phone and, like, listen to, like, mission control talking to the astronauts.
Hmm.
So I'm standing there with Alex. I pick it up and went, "Yes, Commissioner."
Yeah.
He's looking at me like, you really,
would.
Dad?
You would.
I'm like, hey, whenever you see a red phone, you pick it up and you say, "Yes, Commissioner." You don't know. Gordon could be on the other line wanting Batman's help. But it was interesting to see his memorabilia from the Gemini program. And then on a wall plaque, they had, like, all the Gemini mission patches.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time I went to the Air and Space Museum, they had Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo, all of the patches on display.
Hmm.
That was kind of cool. So Grissom wrote in his posthumous 1968 book that his book in 68 Gemini, that the realization of Project Mercury's and the unlikelihood of his having another flight in that program prompted him to focus all of his efforts on the upcoming Gemini program. Now, the Gemini program was managed by the Manned Space Center located in Houston, Texas, under direction of the Office of Manned Space Flight, NASA Headquarters, Washington, D.C. Director George E. Mueller. Uh-oh. There's a name that's more famous now.
Oh, that's Robert Mueller.
Right. This could have been a family member.
Possibly.
Yeah, you don't know. Now, he was the Associate Administrator of NASA for Manned Spaceflight, and he served as Acting Director of the Gemini program. William C. Schneider, Deputy Director of Manned Spaceflight for Mission Operations, served as Mission Director for all Gemini flights beginning with Gemini 6A.
Mm.
Gunter Wendt was a McDonnell engineer who supervised launch preparations for both Mercury and Gemini, and would go on to do the same when the Apollo program launched cruise.
I wonder where he came from.
It could have been part of Project Paperclip.
I imagine he'd be brought over. He would have been brought over from Germany after, you know, the Nazis. You know.
Yeah, Project Paper.
Escaped.
Well, that was Project Paperclip.
Hitler got a hold of him. You know.
That was a Project Paperclip when the Nazi regime was falling.
Yeah.
We took some aerospace scientists to America.
When did Von Braun come over?
I think he came over before the war's end.
Before the war?
We'll have to check.
Yeah, because that'd be another one we should do.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Werner Von Braun.
Yeah. Yeah, some of those guys who...
Because he had a lot to do with
right.
the space industry, you know. The,
oh, yeah, he
the
did.
The whole shebang. He's the one that set it all off.
Yeah. Well, Wright-Patterson in Dayton at the Air Force Museum, they have some of the experimental Nazi jets that they captured.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you ever go to Dayton and see Wright-Patterson, it's like two giant hangars, which are airplanes from, like, the Wright brothers all the way up to the stealth fighters.
There's a replica of a World War II buzz bomb in Milford.
Mm.
They used the... I can't remember what kind of engine it was that it used, but it's like a... It's rocket propelled or whatever. It's not really like a rocket, and it's not really
Right.
They call it a buzz bomb because the sound that the jet made.
Mm, okay, yeah.
It's all sustained by the fuel that goes through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they basically pour fuel in and they get it started and it's poof, 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 and it just, you know, they launch it. It's like a cruise missile, but it's not really like that accurate.
Yeah.
Well, the Nazis made them. If you look them up, look up buzz bomb, you'll know what it looks like. But they got a, at the high school or whatever, or on the sign for the high school, they have a replica that's there. It's been there for years. I don't know why they have it or whatever. I don't know what it's, you know, I don't know anything about the school or anything that I went to Donovan. So
right.
We had Wildcats. We didn't have buzz bombs.
Right. So Gunter's team was responsible for completion of the complex pad closeout procedures just prior to spacecraft launch, and he was the last person the astronauts would see prior to closing the hatch.
Hmm.
The astronauts appreciated his taking absolute authority over and responsibility for the condition of the spacecraft and developed a good-humored rapport with him. Yeah, he would have been the guy that would have been right there closing the hatch on them.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that every, you know, the last person. Oh, don't blow up now!
I don't know if it was in the Gemini program when a bunch of the guys died.
Oh, I think that might have been Mercury.
The capsules.
Yeah, I think that might have been Mercury.
Hmm.
I think it's in the Mercury program.
I know it had something
program.
To do with the hatch door.
Yeah, the hatch door. Something, yeah. Now, in 64 and 65, two Gemini missions were flown without crews to test out systems and the heat shield. These were followed by 10 flights with crews in 65 and 66. All were launched by Titan II launch vehicles. Some highlights from the Gemini program include Gemini 4, with Ed White became the first American to make a spacewalk on June 3, 1965. Gemini 5, which was August 21st through the 29th of 65, demonstrated the 8-day endurance necessary for an Apollo lunar mission with the first use of fuel cells to generate its electrical power. Gemini 6A and 7 accomplished the first space rendezvous in December of 65, and Gemini 7 set a 14-day endurance record. Gemini 8 achieved the first space docking with an uncrewed Agena target vehicle. Gemini 10 established that radiation at high altitude was not a problem, further demonstrated the ability to rendezvous with a passive object, and would also be the first Gemini mission to fire the Agena's own rocket. Michael Collins would be the first person to meet another spacecraft in orbit during his second successful EVA. Gemini 11 set a crewed Earth orbital altitude record of 739.2 nautical miles in September of 1966, using the Agena target vehicle's propulsion system. This record still stands as of 2017.
Hmm.
Gemini 12, Buzz Aldrin! Woo! Buzz!
Because we recognize it.
Oh, no, I know some of the others, but I mean, I was in D.C. when Buzz was there on a book tour doing his booking. Buzz is a grizzled old man.
Well, yeah, by now, shit.
Oh, he's more grizzled than Clint Eastwood. I think Clint Eastwood looks under the bed for Buzz Aldrin. And Buzz Aldrin looked like he wanted to throat punch the guy from C-SPAN 2 on the book signing thing. Mm. But Buzz became the first space traveler to prove that useful work could be done outside a space vehicle without life-threatening exhaustion due to the newly implemented footholds, handholds, and scheduled rest periods.
Hmm. So there's still, at this point, there's still a couple of years from landing on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah, this is 64, 65. And we didn't land in 69. So yeah, we're still 4 years out.
Hmm.
Now, rendezvous in orbit was not a straightforward maneuver. Should a spacecraft increase its speed to catch up with another, the result is that it goes into a higher and slower orbit and the distance thereby increases. The right procedure is to go at a lower orbit first, which increases relative speed, and then approach the target spacecraft from below and decrease orbital speed to meet it. To practice these maneuvers, special rendezvous and docking simulators were built for the astronauts. And that's the Gemini program.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever get up to Chicago to the Adler Planetarium...
We should also do the story that behind that movie, Hidden Figures, because it talks about all of this.
That movie was great.
How those rockets actually got into space.
Women behind it.
Yeah, the black women that I had. Crunching all the numbers.
I think one of them just died not too long ago.
I wouldn't doubt it. They'd be pretty old by now.
I remember seeing a picture of this cute young girl with like this huge stack of code that she had, that she made.
Oh, yeah. Everything that computers do now had to be done by room filled with people.
But she was like, she was a cute little thing that had like this big stack of code that it was like one thing of code that went into a computer.
Have you seen that movie?
Hidden Numbers?
Hidden Figures?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Like I said, the Adler Planetarium up in Chicago has got the Gemini 12 capsule.
Of course, we'll do what actually happened.
Yeah.
And not what Hollywood put in the movie.
But like I said, the Adler Planetarium's got the Gemini 12 capsule and a lot of the Gemini memorabilia from Gus.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gus donated all of it. And there's also... I mean, Gus... He was very helpful, you know, instrumental.
Basically, there's so much space crap from going up there and back that it's spread amongst museums across the country.
The Air and Space Museum's got a lot of...
The Smithsonian gets Smithsonian's, to get the best stuff.
Oh, but the Smithsonian gets, like, first crack at it.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure they have all the best stuff.
Because they've got, in the Air and Space section, they've got, like, a model of the Mars rover. The droid that's up there.
And,
And, I mean, it looks good.
They're actually, like, a lot bigger than I...
Yeah. Because
when they first showed them, I'm like, oh, man, those are like... I was thinking like a remote control car size. No, they're huge.
Yeah.
They're like, you know...
I got a picture I'll show you.
They're like 6 or 8, you know, 6 foot tall, you know, with the masts and everything. Yeah. And,
but, I mean, you know, Air and Space Museum's got a lot of good stuff. And I'm sure, you know, you go to other space museums and you'll see other memorabilia from the program. But we're going to wrap this one up. So if you're looking for us out there, we're on Anchor, all major podcasting apps, and Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcast.
Apple
Mode.
We got a couple Facebook pages joining us there. So for the Smartass Historian, I am Scotty J.
I'm Jeff.
Catch you later, folks.
Bye.